Thanks, Harry. That was good. I agree. Kindness is powerful. I got some verses I want to share from Exodus today and then some other verses that tie in, but maybe we can just pray first. Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for each one who's here, Lord, and I pray you would bless those who cannot be here, Lord. Encourage them and where they're at and sickness or other things that has kept them away. I pray you'd be working in their hearts, building faith and encouraging them. And I pray today, just Lord, as I share, you'd help me to knit these verses together in a way that makes sense and is a blessing to the hearer, Lord. I pray that you would just help by your Holy Spirit. Amen. Got quite a number of verses, a couple different themes. I feel like I need the Lord to help me to make it make sense to you, but I can say that it was encouraging to me. And I think there's two themes that we're going to see. I'm going to focus on the first one, and then we'll see if we get to the second one. But you can just start by turning to Exodus chapter 1. As I read through Exodus chapter 1, and then you'll see it confirmed in some of the New Testament verses I'm going to read, it was just coming out to me the theme of fear and faith and how Pharaoh ruled the people of Israel with fear. And it's the same thing today, in that that's one of the devil's objectives, is to rule our lives through fear. He wants us to be influenced by thoughts of fear. He wants us to make decisions based on fear. And just as Moses and these different testimonies we're going to read overcame that fear, there's a wonderful promise that to those of us in the New Testament, through Jesus Christ, we can be anxious for nothing. It says in Luke, I'm not going to read it, but I think it's in the prophecy of Zechariah, that it said that Jesus came so that those who followed him could worship him without fear. And I just have been reflecting on that and just desiring that in my life, because you can, some of these testimonies I'm going to read, I am going to share some of the, like, I was just reflecting on them, and it's amazing. Like, the fear these people overcame was quite something, and I think you're going to probably see it a little bit in the way I share it. But I was also reflecting on my own day-to-day and my own life, and, like, where does fear come to me? Like, does it come that there's so many ways it can come to us, and in every sense, it's damaging, right? Like, for me, just at work, right? Like, we don't call it fear, but I could say I'm anxious about, am I going to get everything done? Or I'm anxious and maybe something, how it's going to work out, or I'm going to have to talk to somebody, maybe it's going to be a little tricky conversation, I can get anxious about that. Like, that's fear, and Jesus wants us to live in freedom from that. And mothers with children, right? Like, there's a million different things that could go wrong with the kids, and the enemy is more than happy to tell us and remind us and pound these things on us about everything that could go wrong and everything we have to be afraid of. But the promise of God is that we can live without fear. We have a promise that says we can be anxious for nothing. And that's one of the reasons Jesus came. And it's quite, I think, as I'm going to read through some of these testimonies in Exodus, we can see it was a real priority in bringing the sons of Israel out of Egypt, that they became free from this fear. And most of them didn't, but some did. So in Exodus chapter 1, verse 15, it says, "Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other was named Puah. And he said, 'When you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live.' But the midwives feared God, and they did not do as the king had commanded them, but let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, 'Why have you done this thing and let the boy live?' So the midwives said to Pharaoh, 'Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and they give birth before the midwife can get to them.' So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very, very mighty. Because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, 'Every son who is born, you are to cast in the Nile, and every daughter you shall keep alive.'" And I would say I didn't have anything, like, just when I read this section, I was just reflecting on, like, it can seem like, just when we read these things, it can just seem like a little story to us, and maybe not to you, but to me, you can just read these things, and they tell this funny, like, not funny, but they tell this, they say to the king of Egypt, the Pharaoh, that the Hebrew women are vigorous, and we don't get there in time. And you can read these things, and you can say, well, that's an interesting thing. I'm surprised the king of Egypt believed this. But if you take a step back and really reflect on what this is like, I don't say this to be fearful or to give fear when I'm trying to talk about overcoming fear, but like the context here is like these Hebrew women, they were called to stand in front of somebody like Hitler. They were called to stand in front of somebody like Herod, who killed the babies in Jesus' time. Like, this is not a little thing. And this Pharaoh, we know from the testimonies of when Moses and Aaron stood before him, he had like guys who were practicing like demonic, satanic things and turning rot. Like, these are his advisors that have evil and demonic things so they can discern, right? Like, surely these midwives would have said, well, Pharaoh's going to know we're not telling the truth. Like, we don't really have a good story here, but I guess we'll tell this thing about the Hebrew wives, Hebrew women giving birth faster than the Egyptian women. But the crux of the story, the crux of the testimony is not in the story they told. The crux of the testimony is that they made a decision ahead of time. That the Pharaoh had said, kill the male babies, and they decided, we're not doing it. We're not going to kill the male babies. We're not going to listen to Pharaoh. We know that in this thing, we have a choice to make. And they didn't know God was going to deliver them. They just had to say, you know what? We're the midwives. God's put us in this place. I know I can stand and say, God does not want me to kill the male babies. I'm not going to do that. And that's where it started. It started with a decision by faith. And then what happened is we see God deliver them. We see they made this decision by faith. And this is my own interpretation, but just as God hardened Pharaoh's heart throughout the testimony of Moses and Aaron, whenever Aaron and Moses would go, and the 10 times God hardens Pharaoh's heart for his own purposes to show his power and greatness over the Egyptians, in this case, God, I'm personally convinced, God spoke to Pharaoh's heart and had him convinced by these midwives. God delivered these midwives. The story of the Hebrew women having babies faster did not deliver these midwives. God delivered these midwives because they had purposed in their hearts to do what they knew was right in the sight of God. They decided, we're going to do what's right, and we're not going to fear the king. We're not going to fear Pharaoh. And I'm not saying it wasn't a situation for some concern, and they might have even been trembling. They might have even been trembling when they were standing before Pharaoh. But how do we know they didn't fear him? Because they made the decision not to kill the male babies. They made the decision and said, we know God's will. I'm going forward in that. And we see that God delivered them. Then in chapter 2, it says, now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when they could hide him no longer, she got a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens walking alongside the Nile. And she saw that her basket among the reeds and sent to her maid, and she brought it to her. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying, and she had pity on him. This is one of the Hebrews' children. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you? Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go ahead. So the girl went and called the child's mother. And then we know, I don't need to read the rest of it there, or I can paraphrase it, but so what do we have here? We've already had Pharaoh. Pharaoh first tried to use the midwives to kill the male babies. Then he gave a broader edict that just said, all the people. If it's a male baby, if it's a Hebrew male baby, kill it. Throw it in the Nile. That's the instruction. It's not just the midwives now. All of you are under this rule and decree from this evil ruler Pharaoh. This is the command. And you read this story, and like, once again, I mean, maybe it's just me, but you can kind of read this story and it's like, oh, they made a basket and hit him in the Nile. Like, think about this story, though. What actually is in this story is they had a male child and they decided, we're not going to listen to the king. Once again, they did not fear the king. So they had this male child. But by the time the child was 3 months old, obviously he's crying and making noise. And they're living in such a place in Egypt where they came to a decision. Listen, somebody may hear this child crying outside. Like, one of Pharaoh's soldiers may walk past and hear this and kick down the door or demand to see the baby to see if it's a male or a female. We can't have him in the house anymore. We got to do something. Like, it's a story of a miraculous deliverance, but it's not a light little story. Like, they literally were in such a place where they're like, we know there's something special about this child. Like, God, there's something special here. They could see it, but they also knew, like, we can't keep this child in the house anymore. Like, somebody's going to walk past and hear the baby and demand to see it, and we need to do something. So they by faith, made this little basket that could float, put the baby in it, and set it on the river and left their daughter to watch it. Like, again, it's a story of some who, and it can seem, it could almost seem like they were afraid, but I'm happy we have the testimony in Hebrews 11, which I'll read quickly about it. They weren't afraid. They'd made their decision not to obey the king, but they also knew having this child in the house is not going to work. Like, we're going to get found out. So they hid the baby in the Nile. And then we know the miraculous story of how God delivered Moses right into the hand of Pharaoh's daughter. Like, again, we see how those who did not fear, like, it's absolutely incredible. Like, again, it's like, you can read this as a little story, but, like, if you think about it, it's like, I keep using these analogies, and maybe it's not helpful for you, but it's like, literally, we have more modern things of people who are horrible. It's like, literally, a relative of an evil dictator, say Hitler, or say some other man that comes to mind, who's purposed in his heart to kill people, his very daughter rescues this child of the people that he is ordered to be murdered. And it's just a miraculous deliverance. And we see how in all these circumstances, and like the point to take from it is the things that want to bring us fear, the things that want to make us afraid, God is in control. Like, God is in control. He can take the very daughter of the man who's been the man who gave the instruction to kill all the Hebrew babies, all the Hebrew male babies. His very daughter is going to bring a Hebrew male baby into the palace. Like, it's amazing to see these deliverances that God brought for those who chose not to fear. And it's a choice, because if you go on your emotions, you're going to have fear. That's part of the reason why I shared. I don't think necessarily, maybe God had such faith in those midwives that they didn't have any fear at all or no trembling when they stood in front of Pharaoh. But part of me is like, they might have been afraid inside, but they'd made the choice that I trust God. They made the choice that I'm not going to fear. They made the choice that when my emotions run against me, when my emotions tell me that I'm going to get caught, this is going to go bad, something's going to go wrong here, they made the choice to say, no, I know God does not want me to kill these babies. Therefore, I'm not going to fear. I'm going to follow through and walk in what God has shown me, and I'm not going to fear the king. I'm going to resist that fear. And let's turn to Hebrews 11. You don't have to. I've got a few of these things marked because I'm going to jump around a little bit, but I think it's good. We may come back and forth here a few times. Hebrews 11, 23. It says, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. So again, we have a second testimony here in the life of Moses that they were not afraid. The king had given a command, the midwives weren't afraid, and God brought about a deliverance to the midwives and spared the male babies because they weren't afraid. And then we also have Moses' parents who were not afraid of the king's edict. And we see how God worked absolutely miraculous circumstances to bring about a deliverance. Let's turn to just later on in chapter 2. Because I think, as I said, I kind of have two themes. Fear is one of them, and then just the way God works and deals with us is the other that I want to call out in these verses. And this is going to tie a little bit into the second theme here. So we see at the end of Exodus chapter, or in the middle of Exodus chapter 2. So Moses is now gone and grown up in the princess's house, in the house of the palaces of Egypt. Moses has been raised there. But then he went out in verse 11 on one day to see his brothers and sisters, the Hebrews, the Israelites, and he saw an Egyptian beating one of them, and so he went and he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And why did he do that? Well, part of it was because he felt the injustice of it. But part of it was because somehow over the ensuing years in the Egyptian palaces, Moses had come to understand that God was going to bring a deliverance through him, that God was going to do something great through his life, that somehow God was going to effect a salvation or a deliverance on his people through Moses. So Moses is getting trained up and becoming well-learned and well-spoken and very powerful in all that Egypt had to offer. And he saw this Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and he saw the injustice of it, but he also thought, you know what? I think this is God's timing. I think God is going to bring about this deliverance to me, and I think it starts today. I think it starts today. I'm going to kill this Egyptian, and my fellow Hebrews are going to understand that, you know what? Deliverance from the Egyptians is coming through me, and God is going to use me to deliver you. So he killed the Egyptian. Then he went out the next day in verse 13 and saw two Hebrews fighting. And he said, why are you striking your companion? But he said, who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? So Moses was afraid. The fear came. The fear came to Moses, and he said, surely the matter has become known. So Moses thought he was going to bring about a deliverance for God, and he thought that everybody, all the Hebrews, were going to rally around him. But instead, what happened was he realized he made a big mistake. He made a big mistake killing this Egyptian. And he's like, you know what? It's not a secret. The king knows, and I'm in trouble. And so he was very afraid and got out of Egypt and went to a neighboring country or whatever you want to call it. He went to the neighboring area called Midian because he was afraid and knew he needed to get out of Egypt. So this is not a testimony of deliverance here. This is a testimony of Moses not acting in faith, but rather trying to do it in his own strength and ending up afraid and on the run at the end of it. And you don't have to turn there, but just to confirm the interpretation or the way I'm sharing it, you can see it in Acts chapter 7. Because it says in Acts chapter 7, in verse 24, that when Moses saw one of them, being an Israelite, being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him. But they did not understand. And the following day he appeared to them as they were fighting together, and he tried to reconcile them in peace, saying, men and brethren, why do you injure one another? But the one who was injuring his neighbor pushed him away, saying, who has made you a ruler or a judge over us? You do not mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian. At this remark, Moses fled and became an alien in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. So now we have Moses on the run, out in Midian. I think God's working on him out there to work on this self-confidence he had, rather than a dependence on God, teaching him God's ways, teaching him that it's not going to be through the strength and knowledge and wisdom he had from Egypt that deliverance is going to come, but it's going to come through dependence on God. And I think that was a big difference between what we saw in the first two testimonies of the midwives and Moses' parents. I don't think Moses' parents were sitting there thinking, wow, we've had such an awesome idea of the basket in the water. Like, this is just, we're so smart. They were just like, this is all we can think of to do. God have mercy. God have mercy on us. We know we're not going to obey the king. But God, we need you to deliver this baby. We need you to help. and the Egyptian midwives, or the Hebrew midwives, again, I don't think they were saying, oh, we've got this great story. We're going to tell the king of Egypt. We're going to tell him this story, and he's going to believe it. I think, again, they were just like, God, we're obeying you. We don't want to live in fear. We know your way. We know what you want us to do, and we're going to do it. But please have mercy and help us. And in both cases, we see that's the situation where God's work. Whereas you got Moses here, who's like, I'm ready. God, I know what to do. Deliverance, it's time. I am ready to deliver here. I'm very powerful in word and deed, as it says elsewhere in Acts. I'm ready to bring about a deliverance. And God was like, Moses, you are so far from ready. You are so far from ready. You have no idea how you're going to overcome the fear and the intimidation that is the Egyptians want to bring on you. You don't have a clue. You're all strong in yourself. And God said, Moses, you're going to spend 40 years in Midian learning some of my ways and learning how I work and how I deliver. So he's out in Midian, and in chapter 3, we see some things here. Actually, maybe I'll go to chapter 4. I may come back to the burning bush because it was some, I think there's some lessons there, but I want to sort of stick on the topic of fear here. So in chapter 4, God has spoken to Moses, told him, given him the calling to go back and speak to Pharaoh and lead his people out of Egypt. And that happens when he's at the burning bush in chapter 3, and he's still at this place of God talking to him. And in chapter 4, he says, what shall I say? Or Moses says, what if they will not believe or listen to me? Listen to what I say, for they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you. The Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? And he said, a staff. Then he said, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from it. But the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand and grasp it by its tail. So he reached out his hand and caught it. And it became a staff in his hand. And later on, it comes to be known as the staff of God. And I was reflecting, and why this lesson? Like, is it just, like, it is, it's quite a powerful sight to see a stick turn into a serpent and he grab it again and it turns back into a staff. But I don't know, as I reflected on it, I thought there was something to the fact that when it became a serpent, Moses ran. Moses was afraid of that serpent. Moses had fear, and when he saw it on the ground, he ran away. But God told him, go back, reach out your hand, and grab that serpent by the tail. And when Moses took that step of faith and grabbed it, it turned back into a staff. And not just Moses' staff anymore. It turned into the staff of God, which we'll read a bit more about. But I see here now, Moses is in a place where he's starting to be trained of God, where he's beginning to come to a place where the things that are terrifying him, he's trusting God, he's obeying God, and listening, and all of a sudden he's starting to see God work. And I was just encouraged by the thought of how when God is in control, things that are in our lives now that we maybe would have once been afraid of, things that are the enemy, the serpent, the devil is trying to give us fear out of, God wants to help us. God wants to bring us to a place where we don't have to be afraid of these things. And rather, we're going to see how this very thing ends up being the sign that God wants to give to the Hebrew people and even to Pharaoh. And I know the sign. I'm not saying the Hebrews, when they saw the serpent and the staff, I'm not saying they were immediately saying, oh, God doesn't want us to be afraid. I know that the sign was the fact it was a miracle to see a staff turn into a serpent and then turn back into a staff when he grabs it. But Moses was, I think it's just something deeper. I think the Holy Spirit may be wanting to teach us, like, why did, like, just the stuff that happens in the Old Testament are shadows and types. They're meant to show us something greater that's in the New Covenant. And I think what God was showing the Israelites and showing Moses right from the start, you don't need to be afraid. The serpent is defeated. you don't need to be afraid of him. You don't need to run from him anymore. And if you're listening to me, this very thing that you're afraid of could actually be a great tool in my hand. Then in the next testimony, he said in verse 6, the Lord said furthermore to him, now put your hand into your bosom. So he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow. And he said, put your hand into your bosom again. So he put his hand into his bosom again. When he took it out of his bosom, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. And we can read this story, and there's a couple things that come to mind for me. Is like, just because I was reading a little bit of a testimony about leprosy, we read elsewhere, just a few chapters later in Exodus, that Miriam and Aaron oppose Moses, and I can tell you that it's just a little bit further, and they stand against him, and it's their pride, and Miriam is judged, and she gets leprosy because of this judgment. And in that testimony, both Moses and Aaron are like crying out to God, like, have mercy on Miriam. This is horrible. This is horrible, this judgment on her. Like, God, please. And even Moses, who's the one who they were disrespecting. And I say that, and God delivers her. And I say that not to tie it directly to this miracle, but just to show their reaction to leprosy. Like, leprosy, like, once again, just like some of these other testimonies, you can read these things and not think much of it or think it's, well, it's an interesting miracle. But I personally think, just like reaching out for the snake, and just like when the rod turned to a snake and Moses ran away from it, I just think that when Moses would have pulled his hand out of his bosom and seen it covered in leprosy, like, I just think the bottom might have dropped out of his heart. Like, I don't know if you guys know that feeling when you're like really afraid of something, all of a sudden just boom, like, whoa. And again, he's sitting here going, wow, like, now I have leprosy. And it all happened quickly. But I just think, once again, he's like, this is not good. I have leprosy. And then God, what does he do? He says, immediately, sort of following, says, put your hand back into your bosom and pull it out again. And he's healed. So what is God showing Moses? Like, God is showing Moses, like, you don't need to be afraid. Like, one of the most dreaded diseases known to man is all over you. But Moses, I'm in control here. I'm in control. And everyone who sees this is going to marvel, because everyone has the same reaction to leprosy. Everybody is afraid of leprosy. Everyone's afraid of leprosy, Moses. But I am in control of it. I'm in control. If someone gets it, I'm in control. If they're healed, I'm in control. You need, like, it's, I just think that in addition to these things being a sign so the Hebrews would believe, there are also lessons. There are also lessons to be learned about God and how we can trust him. We can trust him in the face of these things. And I think the even deeper lesson here is the true new covenant lesson, which is two miracles, I would say, in the new covenant. And this is my own interpretation, but it's two miracles. Because in the new covenant, we can come to a place where we can get a little glimpse of the leprosy that's inside our heart. We can get a glimpse of the dominion that sin has in our lives. And it's worse than leprosy. It's worse than any disease, the power of sin. But Jesus was already showing us through this example that when he came that they would not have to be afraid of the serpent anymore. And he came that this leprosy that was inside our bosoms, inside our hearts, could be healed by God. The two lessons, the first two lessons he wanted Moses to know. Listen, when they're questioning you, Moses, know this, that I've defeated the serpent and you do not need to be afraid of him. And this leprosy that comes when you see what's inside your bosom, I can heal it. I can heal it. And I just think if we take a little glimpse deeper into this story and reflect on those lessons, they're powerful lessons for delivering us from fear. That Satan has been defeated. That Satan is no longer an enemy to be feared. He's an enemy to be resisted. He's an enemy to be resisted every single day, firm in the faith. but he is not an enemy to be feared. Though he prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking those he may devour. That verse is not written so that we're afraid of the devil. That verse is written so that we're on guard against him, because he is playing for keeps. He is playing for keeps. Young people, adults, the enemy wants to destroy us, and we need to be on guard against him. He wants to pull us and ensnare us and destroy us through sin. But we have the promise that through Jesus Christ, he's been defeated. And we do not need to be afraid of him, but rather we can resist him, firm in the faith. And he wants to bring us in through sin. He wants to bring us in through fear. There's all kinds of tactics he wants to use, but we can resist him because he's been defeated. And what's more, things in our own life, where we see that leprosy, where we see those areas where we struggle to believe that God can help us, we can look on this testimony of how God had complete control over the worst disease. I'm going to say the worst, maybe it wasn't, but one of the most dreaded diseases known to man at that time. God had complete control over it. In his shirt, out with leprosy, back in his shirt, healed. God was showing Moses, I'm in control. You do not need to be afraid. And I think we can take some of that and apply it to ourselves. Maybe let's turn to Exodus chapter. Well, I want to read. Let's turn to Exodus chapter or Exodus 5:22. So now Moses has gone back. He's met Aaron. He's seen God working already. Aaron was prompted by God to come out and meet him, just as God had told Moses. He's gone back, and they've had an initial discussion with Pharaoh. They've had an initial discussion with Pharaoh and asked Pharaoh to let the people go, let them to go 3 days into the wilderness to worship him. And Pharaoh is completely unmoved by this. He's actually quite the contrary. God hardens his heart, just as God said it was going to happen. God hardens Pharaoh's heart, and Pharaoh's response is rather to put more oppression on the people. He doubles down with his fear tactics, and he doubles down with the oppression he wants to put on the people. Once they've heard some good news, because it says they actually believed. It's interesting. At one point earlier, it says that when Moses went and did the signs, it says in verse 31, so the people believed when they heard that the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel, and that he had seen their affliction, then they bowed low and worshipped. So they had started to believe, but Pharaoh's response was to oppress them. Pharaoh's response was to say, okay, they used to be given straw to make the bricks. Pharaoh said, now you're going to have to gather the straw, but make the same amount of bricks. And all that the Hebrews could say is, this is impossible. It says they were traveling all over Egypt trying to get straw to make these bricks. And when the leaders of Israel, who were held to account for this scenario, for the fact the production was down, they were beaten. They were beaten. Pharaoh took some of his henchmen and took the leaders of Israel and actually beat them physically because they weren't able to make the quota. All of this is to drive fear into the Hebrews, to drive fear into the Israelites that, you know what? Don't even think about trying to get out of my kingdom. Don't even think about serving anyone other than me. Don't even let that thought cross your mind. Because if you start thinking about serving someone other than me, it's going to go very, very badly for you. It's going to be horrible. There's no way you can make it if you're thinking about going and serving some other god. You need to sit here and do what I say and live in fear of my commands. And don't even think about being free. It's impossible that you will be free. And in verse 22, it says, then Moses returned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you brought harm to this people? Why did you ever send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done harm to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. So we see Moses here, he's not believing. He's not believing. He is struggling. He's struggling with this scenario. He's struggling with what God has allowed. And I read this, when I read this morning, I guess I could say the only thing that was a lesson to me and a lesson to learn is just how even in Moses, the man chosen by God, who spoke to God face to face, like, it's hard when things don't go according to our plans. And Moses has had to learn this lesson a few times, right? Moses first thought he was going to deliver. He thought everybody was going to rally around him and a great deliverance was going to come when he killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. And after that lesson, he ended up on the run because he realized that not only is Israel, the Hebrews, not rallying around me, they're not seeing me as their deliverer. I've now made myself an enemy of the king of Egypt and I'm afraid of him and I got to get out of here. And then when he comes back now, instructed by God that this is God's time, and you are my man, Moses, you are my man to deliver Israel. I have a plan, and I'm going to use you to deliver the people of Israel. Even then, when it doesn't unfold as Moses was expecting, he came to a place where he actually was saying, God, you're not doing it. Like, I've been here, and you have not delivered this people. But then God said to Moses, now you'll see what I will do to Pharaoh. For under compulsion, he will let them go. And under compulsion, he will drive them out of his land. So Moses, you're not going to have to run out. Pharaoh's actually going to push you out of this land. I'm actually going to use Pharaoh to move you guys out. And it says elsewhere that you're going to plunder. You're going to plunder the Egyptians. You're not going to go out empty-handed. You're going to go out, and I am going to lead you out with riches from Egypt. And so it just is God saying, Moses, I'm going to do it, but it's going to be my timing and my ways. And when I do it, you're not even going to have to be on the run. It's not going to be some stealthy thing. You're actually going to see God. You're going to see me deliver, and it's going to happen. And I can tell you that the lesson to learn here, and I'm going to read one more verse on it, is that Moses was low. He didn't understand God's ways. He was questioning them. He was not sure if God was going to bring about a deliverance. And I think maybe some of the fear was coming back. But God spoke to Moses. And Moses did believe. Moses believed. Somewhere in the following few chapters, as God continues to perform his signs and wonders on Pharaoh, Moses went from questioning and not understanding and not sure about God and his plan here to completely confident that God was going to bring about a deliverance. And he also, in that time, became completely convinced that whatever God said, he was going to do. And whatever God commanded him, he was going to follow that exactly. And if we turn to, let's turn to Exodus chapter 14. And I just say this to kind of confirm what I was saying there. It says in Exodus chapter 14, verse 11, they've now come out of Egypt. Pharaoh drove them out of Egypt and they plundered the Egyptians. And they're now on the start of their journey through the wilderness, but not very far. And it says here that God actually hardened Pharaoh's heart to chase them. So God actually was fully in control here and hardened Pharaoh's heart because God wasn't done with his judgments on Pharaoh. But he's now brought Pharaoh to be chasing the Israelites, and they're up again, and God also led the Israelites to be camped up against the Red Sea. And the Israelites in verse 11, then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out to Egypt, out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. I can just say I'm so thankful, and I think they should be so thankful, that Moses did not listen to that counsel. Moses did not listen when the leaders of Israel said, leave us alone. We just want to keep serving Egypt. I think that's an encouragement to us too, as having those we love who maybe are struggling to understand God's ways and struggling to come to a complete surrender to Jesus Christ. So we can be like Moses. When they say, leave me alone, I don't want to hear about this anymore, or however the words come, we can remember this story where Moses did not listen to them. He did not listen when they said, we just would rather stay in Egypt. This is too tough. What you're asking me, what you're asking of us, Moses, it seems crazy. It's just so hard. We're so afraid of Pharaoh. We don't know what to do. We don't like everything that's going on here. Just leave us here to die in Egypt. Leave us here to live in Egypt and serve the Egyptians. But Moses did not listen to that. He continued to lead. He continued to plead with Pharaoh, saying, let my people go. And he, most importantly, continued to trust and obey God. And God did deliver those people. And here's what Moses says in response to this. But Moses said to the people, do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. And like, I just, what a different response. What a different response from what we read of four chapters ago. And what we can also know, I mean, Moses was under the old covenant. He had his struggles. But Moses never went back to where he was in the first few chapters ago where I read, I think it was chapter 6 was, where he sort of said, God, you've done nothing. Your deliverance isn't working. He never went back from that. He came to a place where he said, do not fear, stand by and see the salvation of God. And when multiple times when the Israelites were on the wilderness journey and they said, we want to go back, like take us back to Egypt, Moses. This is terrible. We don't like this path that you're leading us on. Moses never was back in that place where he was saying, God, your deliverance isn't working. He came to a place where he believed in the deliverance of God. And he came to a place where it says, by faith, he knew God had riches and a plan ahead for him, that he was not turning back. I am not turning back. I'm looking to the reward. I consider the reproach of Christ, it says in Hebrews chapter 11, maybe I'll turn there and we'll finish there after this. I consider the reproach of Christ greater riches than anything Egypt had to offer. And he saw a lot of what Egypt had to offer. But he came to a place where he said, you're never going to see these Egyptians again. And do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord. For the Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. As for you, lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the sons of Israel shall go through the midst of the sea on dry land. And I was just thinking about that, like how we read about that first miracle that God showed Moses when the staff turned to a serpent and he picked it up and it turned back to a staff. How that miracle and that staff, which became the staff of God, was used over and over again in the deliverance of Israel. It was used here where he had to, God told him, like God just could have said, scripture is precise. God, there could have been lots of different instructions to Moses. Other times they had to, like we know with the ark, they had to set their first foot in the water. When they set that first foot in the water of the Jordan split. But with Moses, it was the staff. God said, hold out your staff and you'll see the water split. And I was just reflecting on that, like how as a brother or sister, as we in Christ are able to come to a place or even in some small measure where the enemy's schemes to bring fear and defeat, where we by faith are able to defeat that fear by faith and by the help of Jesus Christ, are able to come to a place where that fear no longer dominates us, that very fear can become something that we can actually bless others with. That very victory, I shouldn't say the fear, the victory can be something that we can bless others with. As we walk through this life, we can say, you know what? Brother, sister, I know what you're feeling. I've been in that place. I've suffered from that. I know how the enemy works. And the Lord can give you words because he can't probably say these things as plainly as I am. but we can at least pray. We know how the enemy works, and we can see him at times working in others to bring fear and oppression, to make those who are trying to escape the king of Egypt just come under his grasp through fear and anxiety and all the things he wants to bring. But as we've been given a victory, as we've been helped by Jesus Christ to overcome, to know that Satan is a defeated foe, that at the cross he was completely disarmed and made a spectacle of, as we believe that and apply it in our lives, it can also be used to be a blessing to others. That very staff was used to hold out, and when the staff went out, when the people saw the staff go out, the sea parted. And what happens later on? The people are afraid, like they're suffering. We have lack of water. We have no water. What are we going to do? You can double check me because I read it this morning. I think it says it again. It would have been better to die in Egypt. I think again, their minds are going back to Egypt. And what does God tell Moses to do? Take the staff again. Take the staff again and strike the rock. And the water comes out. And I just was reflecting on that, thinking, you know what? I think this could be, I'm sure there's a lot more to it, because we know at other times Moses was instructed not to strike the rock with the staff. Like, I know there's more lessons here, but I just see the testimony of Moses running away from that serpent, God telling him to go back and grab that serpent by the tail, and that serpent became a staff. And that staff became the staff of God, a testimony that God was able to use through Moses throughout the deliverance of the sons of Israel. That's because it even says it when he left Egypt, or sorry, when he left Midian, he said, he left with on a donkey, he left with his wife, and he left with his child, his son, and he left with the staff of God. He left Midian with that testimony that God had turned that serpent into a staff. And then throughout the time, throughout the deliverance of the Israelites and throughout their journey throughout the wilderness, God was continuing to use that testimony to show the Israelites that he can provide for them, that they don't need to be afraid. They need to just trust him and obey him and believe in him, not listen to the lies, not listen to the doubt, not listen to all the ways the enemy wants to bring fear. And what comes, if you look through it, what comes with fear? Grumbling and complaining. Once we start to get afraid, we start grumbling and complaining. And now I'm just speaking practically for myself. When I'm afraid or when I'm anxious and stressed, I get irritable and all these other bad fruits. Anger comes. For me, if I'm stressed, if I'm living in fear, anger is just around the corner. Anger, an outburst of anger is right there. The enemy's got that next snare he's already laying for me, that I'll somehow lash out at my wife or my children because of the root of anxiety and fear that's gripping me. But Jesus wants us to live free from that. He wants us to live free from fear and anxiety, so much so that he actually commands it, that we should be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, make our request known to God. And the peace of God, which passes understanding, can rule in our hearts through Christ Jesus. He wants us to live in that way. And I say this not speaking down on anyone, because I know we all have our different battles. We all have our different tests. Some of us are in greater struggles with this, some lesser. But I think anyone who's honest with themselves can look back and see those things that make us afraid, can see those things that make us anxious, that the enemy uses to want us to bring fear. And in every one of those, Jesus Christ wants to deliver us. He wants to give us a testimony in it. He wants to turn that serpent into a testimony that we trusted Jesus and he helped us, and we don't have to live in fear of that anymore. And it comes, we have to pray, we have to, with thanksgiving, make our supplications known to God, and we have to resist the devil firm in the faith, because just because we had a victory once, he can come back and try and test us again. But he wants us to live free from fear. Let's turn to Hebrews 11. We'll just keep reading from where I ended. First. Thank you, Andrew. I'll read one more verse. Last verse. Verse 27. Hebrews 11, 27. Verse 26. choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God rather than to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. So we can see that just the testimony of Moses, by faith he left the pleasures of Egypt. He considered the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking to the reward. And by faith he left, not afraid of the wrath of the king. The first time he left, he was terrified of the wrath of the king. But the second time he left, he had no fear of the wrath of the king because God was doing it his way and bringing about a deliverance by faith.